Hello and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1 is a featured original research article by Gertzman et al. Early Rehabilitation Bundle in a Canadian PICU, Cost Analysis of Implementation from 2018 to 2020. Objectives. First, to determine the resources and costs required to implement an early rehabilitation or ABCDEF bundle. Second, to compare the impact of the bundle on costs pre- and post-implementation. Design and setting. Cost analysis was conducted as part of an implementation study at McMaster Children's Hospital PICU in 2018 to 2020. Measurements and main results. Resource estimates for all implementation activities from 2018 to 2020 were calculated from material costs and hours spent by personnel multiplied by wages. PICU and patient level costs before, from January 2019 to March 2019, and after bundle implementation, from January 2020 to March 2020, were compared using case costing data. Linear regression was used to analyze log transformed costs adjusted for age, sex, and severity of illness score. Costs are reported in Canadian dollars. A total of 907 hours were spent over a two-year implementation period at an estimated cost of $50,813 Canadian dollars. Physicians contributed the most hours, followed by the nurse educator and pharmacist. Material costs were 860 Canadian dollars. There were 141 patients pre-implementation and 84 patients post-implementation in the analyses. Adjusted mean PICU cost per patient was $17,342 Canadian dollars and $20,310 Canadian dollars pre to post implementation respectively. The mean difference between post and pre-implementation was 17% higher, with a 95% confidence interval from 6.3% lower to 46% higher. Adjusted mean pharmacy cost per patient was $834 Canadian dollars pre-implementation and $827 Canadian dollars post-implementation, with a mean difference of 0.8% lower post-implementation and a 95% confidence interval from 27% lower to 35% higher. Conclusions. Implementation of the ABCDEF bundle requires significant time and collaboration of key stakeholders. There was no impact on PICU or patient costs following bundle implementation, but the period of observation was limited by COVID-19. Future studies should include cost analyses that incorporate longer-term, patient-centered health outcomes to determine whether this intervention is cost-effective. Abstract 2 is a featured original research article by Murray et al. Stop the Clot, a Quality Improvement Initiative to Reduce the Rate of Venous Thromboembolism in the PICU. Objectives. We aim to reduce the rate of hospital-acquired venous thromboembolism in the PICU by 50% from 2.07 to 1.04 venous thromboembolism per 1,000 patient days by June 2023 and sustain this change for 6 months. Design, Prospective Quality Improvement Project. Setting, the PICU of an urban academic freestanding children's hospital in the United States. Patients, all patients admitted to the PICU between December 2020 and December 2023. Interventions. We identified key drivers including provider knowledge gaps surrounding VTE risk in our patient population, identification of patients at risk of VTE, the absence of appropriate screening and prevention tools, and central venous line duration and location. These key drivers were each addressed, with the most significant intervention being the creation of a simple screening tool to identify and provide thromboprophylaxis recommendations for patients most at risk for developing VTE. Measurements and main results. We identified the monthly occurrence rate of VTE as our outcome measure, the provision of VTE thromboprophylaxis as our process measure, and the presence of bleeding events as our balancing measure. The rate of VTE in PICU patients decreased from 2.07 to 1.14 per 1,000 patient days. There was an increase in the provision of pharmacologic thromboprophylaxis during our intervention period from 36% to 42%, with no change in the rate of mechanical thromboprophylaxis. There were only two instances of clinically relevant non-major bleeding as defined by the International Society of Thrombosis and Hemostasis definition in non-surgical patients on antihemostatic agents during our intervention period. There was a decrease in central venous catheter days from 43% to 31% of PICU patient days during the intervention period. Conclusions. Upon implementing a protocolized screening and prevention tool for VTE, we observed a decreased occurrence of hospital-acquired VTE. Abstract 3 is a featured original research article by Tucci et al. Pilot Optimizing Transfusion Therapy in Critically Ill Children with Anemia. A pilot multi-center electronic health record enabled randomized controlled trial on red blood cell transfusion in critically ill children. Objectives. To evaluate the feasibility of conducting a large international electronic health record-enabled randomized control trial designed to compare two strategies for red blood cell transfusion in almost all anemic critically ill children, and the ability to support data abstraction from electronic medical data monitoring systems. Design: two-arm parallel design pilot randomized control trial. Setting: four university-affiliated PICUs in Canada, France, and United Kingdom. Patients: non-cyanotic critically ill children with hemoglobin less than or equal to 9.5 grams per deciliter. Interventions: participants were randomly allocated to a restrictive strategy, which meant no red blood cell transfusion if the hemoglobin was greater than or equal to 7 grams per deciliter, or to usual care, which meant it was clinician discretion for red blood cell transfusion. Measurements and main results. Feasibility outcomes were recruitment, adherence, separation of pre-red blood cell transfusion hemoglobin, and electronic health data extraction from electronic medical data monitoring systems. The proportion of patients with hemoglobin less than or equal to 9.5 grams per deciliter who were eligible for consent to participate in pilot optimizing transfusion therapy in critically ill children with anemia was 83%, with feasibility criterion greater than or equal to 80%. We enrolled 120 patients, 63 in the restrictive and 57 in the usual care arms. We reached the planned recruitment rate greater than or equal to 2 participants per week in sites with greater than 800 admissions per year and greater than or equal to 1 in other sites. The pre-red blood cell transfusion hemoglobin concentration was 6.6 plus or minus 7 and 6.7 plus or minus 1.3 grams per deciliter in the restrictive and usual care arms respectively, with separation equal to 0.1 grams per deciliter and desired difference greater than or equal to 1 gram per deciliter. The pre-transfusion hemoglobin concentration was greater than or equal to 7 grams per deciliter for 6 of 20 red blood cell transfusions, or 30%, given to patients allocated to the restrictive arm, or success criterion for protocol adherence, less than 20%. There were 2 protocol deviations, but no protocol violation. Using electronic medical data monitoring systems, 87.7% of the 390 data elements in the case report form were extracted and/or calculated electronically, with success criterion greater than 80%. Conclusions. Pilot optimizing transfusion therapy in critically ill children with anemia demonstrated the feasibility of recruitment, adherence, and electronic data extraction, but we did not get a good separation of pre-red blood cell transfusion hemoglobin. Future trials need to clearly define transfusion hemoglobin thresholds in both trial arms. Abstract 4 is a clinical investigation article by Butrigueño-Laseca et al. Red cell transfusion during pediatric intensive care, a 28-day point prevalence study in 3 European countries in 2023. Objectives. To describe the prevalence of red blood cell transfusion in children admitted to PICUs in 3 European countries and to determine hemoglobin threshold, triggers, and outcomes for transfusions. Design: international 4-week point prevalence study in 2023. Setting: 44 PICUs across Spain, the United Kingdom, and Italy. Patients: PICU patients 1 month to 17 years old receiving red blood cell transfusion. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. During 4 pre-specified 7-day blocks, from March 2023 to July 2023, 348 of 2,713 patients, or 12.8%, received at least 1 red blood cell transfusion, accounting for 527 transfusions. The proportion of patients receiving red blood cell transfusions in Italy was 17.3%, or 66 of 382. In the United Kingdom was 13.9%, or 166 of 1,195, and in Spain was 10.2%, or 116 of 1,136. The primary indication for transfusion in the 527 transfusion events was hemoglobin level, 54.6%, followed by bleeding, 10.6%, cardiovascular instability, 10.5%, and extracorporeal support, 10.1%. In 45.1% of red blood cell transfusion, there was no other physiologic trigger apart from hemoglobin. The median hemoglobin level before transfusion was 8.3 grams per deciliter with an interquartile range of 7.2 to 9.9 grams per deciliter, with median values varying significantly. Spain was 7.8 grams per deciliter, the United Kingdom was 8.6 grams per deciliter, and Italy was 8.9 grams per deciliter. The p-value was less than 0.001. When excluding cardiac patients, overall median hemoglobin threshold was 7.4 grams per deciliter, with an interquartile range of 6.8 to 8.6 grams per deciliter, and was comparable across the three countries, with a p-value greater than 0.05. The overall 28-day PICU mortality in 348 patients receiving transfusions was 10.7%. The number of transfusions was associated with mortality, even after adjusting for reason for admission and admission pediatric index of mortality score. Conclusions. In 44 European PICUs in 28 days during 2023, 12.8% of critically ill children received one or more red blood cell transfusions during their PICU stay. Hemoglobin level was the primary determinant for transfusion, often exceeding the recommended 7 grams per deciliter threshold. Other clinical triggers are rarely considered. Defining hemoglobin thresholds and adopting goal-directed transfusion strategies may optimize clinical transfusion practices. Abstract 5 is a clinical investigation article by Yung Go et al. Nutritional Status and Mechanical Ventilation Practices in Pediatric Acute Respiratory Distress Syndrome, a secondary analysis of the 2017 to 2023 PARDS Asia study. Objectives. In this non-pre-specified secondary analysis of the PARDS Asia 2017 to 2023 dataset, we describe baseline nutrition status of children with pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome, or PARDS, and determine its association with positive end expiratory pressure, or PEEP, during ventilation and mortality. We hypothesize that abnormal nutritional status was associated with adverse outcomes. Design. The dataset included anthropometric and nutritional data, and body mass index Z-scores were obtained using the World Health Organization standards. Underweight is body mass index or BMI Z-score less than negative 1, and overweight is BMI Z-score greater than plus 1. PEEP and FiO2 combinations by the standard grid in underweight, overweight, and normal nutrition groups were compared. Cox proportional hazard regression tested the association between nutrition status and 60-day mortality. Setting, 21 PICUs across Asia from 2017 to 2023. Patients, PARDS Asia patients who met the 2015 International Guidelines for the Diagnosis and Management of PARDS from the PALIC criteria. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Overall, of 693 PARDS Asia patients, we included 625 cases comprising 261 of 625 or 41.8% underweight, 235 of 625 or 37.6% normal, and 129 of 625 or 20.6% overweight patients. Being underweight compared with normal or overweight status was associated with younger median age. The median age for underweight was 1 year with an interquartile range of 0.3 to 3.7 years. In normal was 1.4 years with an interquartile range of 0.5 to 4.6 years, and overweight was 1.9 years with an interquartile range of 0.7 to 8.5 years. The p-value was less than 0.001. The prescription of PEEP was more conservative in patients who are underweight compared with patients of normal or overweight nutritional status. PEEP to FiO2 combinations by group were as follows. Underweight, negative 1.7 with an interquartile range of negative 3.3 to 0. Normal, negative 0.9 with an interquartile range of negative 2.7 to 0. And overweight, negative 0.6 with an interquartile range of negative 1.8 to 0.4 centimeters of water below recommended grid value. The p-value was less than 0.001. Underweight nutritional status was associated with greater risk of 60-day mortality, with an adjusted hazard ratio of 1.85 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.14 to 3.01. Conclusions. Underweight nutritional status was prevalent among children within the PARDS Asia 2017 to 2023 dataset and was associated with poor clinical outcomes. The prescription of PEEP was more conservative in underweight patients compared with those with normal or overweight status. Abstract 6 is a clinical investigation article by Maeda et al. Presence of families at the bedside in the PICU. Prospective mixed method study of race and insurance disparities. objectives to determine whether patient race, ethnicity, preferred language, insurance type, and social deprivation index are associated with differences in caregiver presence in the PICU, and to explore caregiver perspectives on decision-making about time spent at and away from bedside. Design. Single-center prospective concurrent mixed method study including 1. A quantitative point prevalence study of caregiver bedside presence, and 2. A qualitative study of interviews with caregivers. Setting. 75-bed PICU in a quaternary children's hospital in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Patients. Over the period from 2022 to 2023, we enrolled 1. Children with anticipated moderate to long PICU length of stay, and 2. Adult caregivers of children in our PICU. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Multivariable regression tested associations between caregiver presence and race, ethnicity, preferred language, insurance type, and social deprivation index. Semi-structured interviews with caregivers were evaluated using thematic analysis. Among 159 subjects, Black patient race relative to white and public insurance relative to private were associated with 18 and 10 fewer hours of caregiver presence during a 48-hour period, respectively. Caregivers nearly universally shared a desire to be present, yet the ability to be present was affected by practical limitations, including job flexibility and family availability. Conclusions. Public insurance and Black patient race were associated with decreased caregiver presence, disparities that may be explained by practical limitations. Additional work is necessary to explore ways to mitigate barriers to presence and equitable family-centered care, and to investigate potential impacts of caregiver presence on health outcomes. Abstract 7 is a clinical investigation article by O'Halloran et al., Development of a Novel Cardiac Arrest Ventilation Rate Metronome, a Human Factors and Implementation Science Mixed Methods Approach. Objectives. Excessive ventilation adversely affects cardiopulmonary resuscitation, or CPR, hemodynamics, and outcomes. Pediatric providers rarely achieve guideline-recommended CPR ventilation rates. We aim to use human factors engineering to design a metronome to improve compliance with recommended CPR ventilation rates. We hypothesized that in usability testing, our novel metronome would achieve 1. A system usability scale score greater than 68, and 2. Greater than 70% of CPR epics with ventilation rates within target range, which would be sufficient to support a pilot trial in our PICU. Design. Prospective single-center mixed method study. Setting. 75-bed academic PICU. Participants. Multidisciplinary clinicians. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We elicited clinician feedback on the proposed ventilation rate metronome with a survey. Participatory design sessions determine optimal metronome components. During high-fidelity simulation usability testing, we collected qualitative and quantitative measures reflecting participant feedback and performance. Average ventilation rates were calculated during 30-second epochs of CPR, with average rates plus or minus 2 breaths per minute from the target considered to be within goal range. Among 107 survey respondents, perceptions of appropriateness, acceptability, and feasibility of the ventilation rate metronome were favorable. The final prototype used a bell sound for high saliency in noisy environments and a scrolling timed vertical bar with preset options for 3 guideline-recommended CPR ventilation rates. Infants, 30 breaths per minute, children 1 to 17 years old, 20 breaths per minute, and adults, 10 breaths per minute. In usability testing, 3 groups, 34 clinicians, median system usability scale was 92.5 of 100 with an interquartile range of 89.4 to 93.1 with 0 attributable errors. Overall, 34 of 36 or 94% with a 95% confidence interval of 81 to 99% of epochs of simulated CPR with metronome use had ventilation rates plus or minus 2 breaths per minute from the target rate. Conclusions. Utilizing human factors engineering and implementation science, we successfully designed a novel ventilation rate metronome. When deployed during high-fidelity cardiac arrest simulations, metronome use had high usability scores and resulted in excellent compliance with recommended ventilation rates. Abstract 8 is a PCCM trial by Johnson et al. Protocol for a group sequential two-strata multicenter open-label randomized clinical trial of respiratory support in infants with acute bronchiolitis, breathing assistance in children with bronchiolitis. Objectives. The Breathing Assistance in Children with Bronchiolitis trial aims to evaluate the clinical and cost-effectiveness of high-flow nasal cannula therapy compared with humidified standard oxygen in infants with moderate bronchiolitis and high-flow nasal cannula with continuous positive airway pressure, or CPAP, in severe bronchiolitis. Design. Pragmatic, group sequential, two-stratum, multicenter, open-label randomized clinical trial. Setting. 50 hospitals across England, Scotland, and Wales. Patients. Hospitalized infants younger than 12 months old with a clinical diagnosis of bronchiolitis assessed at least twice 15 minutes apart to fulfill criteria for either severe bronchiolitis defined as one or more of respiratory rate greater than 70 breaths per minute, grunting, marked chest recession, or recurrent short apneas, or moderate bronchiolitis defined as lack of response to low flow oxygen indicated by persistent hypoxemia and or moderate respiratory distress. Interventions. Moderate bronchiolitis stratum included high-flow nasal cannula at a flow rate of 2 liters per kilogram per minute versus humidified standard oxygen through a face mask or head box at a flow rate of up to 15 liters per minute. Severe bronchiolitis stratum was defined as high-flow nasal cannula at a flow rate of 2 liters per kilogram per minute versus CPAP pressure set at 6 to 8 centimeters of water. Measurements and main results. In each stratum, eligible infants will be randomly allocated on a one-to-one basis to the trial treatments using a web-based system by permuted block randomization, stratified by site of recruitment and age, less than 6 weeks and greater than or equal to 6 weeks. Due to the emergency nature of the treatments, written informed consent will be deferred. The primary outcome is time from randomization to hospital discharge within 30 days. Baseline clinical characteristics and hospital course, including details of respiratory support and discharge and cost-effectiveness outcomes, will be collected. The trial received Health Research Authority and Research Ethics Committee approval from the Yorkshire and the Humber South Yorkshire Research Ethics Committee on August 3, 2023. Conclusions. Trial findings will be disseminated in national and international conferences, in peer-reviewed journals, and through social media. Abstract 8 is the PCCM conference report and expert panel by Durvin et al. 8 PICU follow-up programs in the United States established from 2013 to 2022. Report from the Pediatric Outcome Studies After PICU or Post-PICU Investigators. Objectives. Children surviving critical illness are at risk for new morbidities collectively termed Post-Intensive Care Syndrome Pediatrics, or PICSP. Because PICU teams are familiar with PICSP and motivated to improve patient outcomes, intensivists are ideally positioned to improve access to PICU follow-up care. We aim to describe various models of care developed by existing U.S. PICU follow-up programs. Design. The Pediatric Outcome Studies After PICU or Post-PICU subgroup of the Pediatric Acute Lung Injury and Sepsis Investigators Network convened a virtual meeting with presentations and discussion by 11 leaders of 8 follow-up programs, structured using input from the 125 Post-PICU members, including advanced questions. Setting. 90-minute virtual meeting, September 2024. We recorded and transcribed the presentations and discussion to draft this report. Panel proceedings. Each leader presented their program and participated in discussion organized into 3 domains based on the provided questions. 1. The program's target population and interventions. 2. Program administration and funding. And 3. Program outcomes. Each program aimed to identify patients considered at risk for physiologic, neurologic, and/or psychologic PICU sequela and to provide screening, referral to supportive or specialist services as indicated, and collaboration with their existing healthcare teams. Funding influenced program structure and processes. Many programs provided clinical services alongside services tied to research efforts. Tracking program outcomes helped programs advocate for long-term funding and institutional support. Panelists described their programs as providing wraparound care, transition care, and connection, supporting patients and families through different stages of the PICU and hospital stay, rehabilitation, and transition to home care. Conclusions. This information can support PICU teams in developing infrastructure to provide clinically indicated education, screening, and support for their patients as the PICU community engages in further research and advocacy to improve access to PICU follow-up care. Abstract 10 is a research letter by Stenko et al. B-type natriuretic peptide in critically ill children, single-center retrospective study of levels in the first 72 hours of PICU admission and outcome. B-type natriuretic peptide, or BNP, is released in response to myocyte distension from volume or pressure overload. Recently, BNP has been used to identify the severity of critical illness in over 3,000 pediatric patients from 2010 to 2018, which included various pathologies such as sepsis and respiratory diseases. Of note, the study found that when considering the first BNP level measured, higher levels were associated with increased mortality, especially for patients with BNP greater than or equal to 10,170 picograms per milliliter. Therefore, the primary objective of our study was to assess the association between peak BNP levels in children obtained within the first 72 hours after PICU admission and outcome variables, including the need for fluid resuscitation, vasoactive medication use, the presence of severe sepsis or septic shock, and hospital mortality. This retrospective cross-sectional study used medical charts and laboratory data between January 2017 and January 2022 in children 29 days to 20 years old who were admitted to the Nicklaus Children's Hospital PICU. The Institutional Review Board determined the chart review study to be exempt from parent consent. In addition to clinical data, including demographic, fluid boluses, laboratory values, and organ support, we also extracted outcome data and the maximum value of BNP during the first 3 days of PICU admission. Patients were grouped in quintiles based on maximum BNP levels. The Kruskal, Wallace, and chi-square tests were used to compare continuous and categorical variables in quintile groups, respectively. Receiver operating characteristic curves were generated with BNP levels and the outcome variables. Uden indices were used to obtain the optimal cutoff values for sensitivity analyses. Sensitivity, specificity, positive predictive value, negative predictive value, and likelihood ratios for positive and negative results were generated along with pre- and post-test probabilities for each outcome. Data were analyzed using SPSS. We identified 681 pediatric patients meeting criteria for inclusion in the cohort. Overall, there were 63 deaths, or 9.3%. The median age was 110 months with an interquartile range of 26 to 185 months. The number of patients included in the first to fifth quintiles were 140, 135, 134, 136, and 136, respectively. Children in the higher quintiles were younger compared with those in the lower quintiles. Elevated BNP levels were associated with abnormal laboratory values. Higher BNP quintiles were also associated with an increase in the duration of ventilation, duration of PICU stay, and PICU risk of mortality 3 score. The proportion of patients with lactate concentration greater than 5 millimoles per liter, septic shock, an arterial line, a central venous catheter, vasoactive medications, fluid bolus, and need for mechanical ventilation was higher with increase in BNP quintiles, with a p-value less than or equal to 0.05. Table 1 presents the area under the receiver operating characteristic curve with 95% confidence interval, the Uden index, and the sensitivity and specificity of maximum BNP values for the outcome variables. The maximum BNP levels showed acceptable discrimination for the use of vasoactive medications, with an area under the curve of 0.793 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.751 to 0.834, and septic shock with an area under the curve of 0.772 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.725 to 0.818. Mortality and the need for a fluid bolus both had poor area under the curve of 0.691 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.621 to 0.760 and 0.613 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.571 to 0.655 respectively. The negative predictive value for the use of vasoactive medications, septic shock, and hospital mortality were all above 89%, while the negative predictive value for the need for fluid bolus was 58%. Taking all of the above together, our retrospective analysis shows that maximum BNP in the first 72 hours of PICU patient admission is a potential early biomarker of severity. Zhang et al. Also found that high BNP levels predicted mortality, but at levels above 10,000 picograms per milliliter, which are much higher than in our study. Unlike our study, however, the majority of their cohort included children with cardiac disease who have higher BNP values. Furthermore, while their article's ability to predict mortality is robust, our article included probabilities of outcomes from a negative test in the form of negative predictive value and likelihood ratios with post-test probabilities. With BNP values under the cutoff, the probabilities of needing vasoactives, having septic shock, and mortality are under 11%. Post-test probabilities of positive tests are low because of the low prevalence of the outcomes. Prospective research is needed to explore how BNP measurement can be optimally used in acute care settings and for triaging patients in, for example, the emergency department for appropriate placement and early recognition of deterioration. Abstract 11 is a research article by Utsumi et al. isolated moderate pediatric traumatic brain injury in Japan from 2019 to 2024. Outcomes after pediatric moderate traumatic brain injury, or TBI, is affected significantly by the coexistence of extracranial injuries. And, as others have pointed out, it is worth assessing isolated moderate TBI to identify factors associated with worse outcomes. Therefore, we have used data from the Japan Trauma Data Bank and restricted the population to pediatric patients aged less than 18 years old with isolated moderate TBI as defined by presenting Glasgow Coma Scale score of 9 to 12 and Head Abbreviated Injury Scale, or AIS, greater than 2, but without severe extracranial injuries. We used univariable analysis to compare patient characteristics between poor and favorable neurologic outcome groups at discharge. This study was approved by the Institutional Review Board of Hiroshima University, and the requirement for informed consent was waived since this work was a post hoc analysis of the Japan Trauma Data Bank. Of the 125 patients included, 81 or 64% were male, with a median age of 10 years and an interquartile range of 4 to 15 years. The median injury severity score was 16, with an interquartile range of 10 to 21, and subdural hematoma was the most frequent intracranial injury in 61 of 125, or 49%. Overall, 66 of 125 patients, or 53%, were admitted to the ICU. 32 of 125, or 26%, required mechanical ventilation, and 26 of 125, or 21%, underwent craniotomy. Poor neurologic outcomes occurred in 14 of 125 patients, or 11%, including one death. Univariate analysis failed to show any associations between patient characteristics and outcome grouping. One death out of 125 cases is a low mortality, or 0.8%, with a 95% confidence interval of 0.8 to 2.4%, which is consistent with the mortality in prior studies in which patients with extracranial injuries were included. Of note, the proportion with poor neurologic outcome in our cohort was lower than the proportion described in 2010 to 2017 single-center U.S. cohort. 14 of 125, or 11%, versus 37 of 177, or 21%, with a mean difference of 10%, a 95% confidence interval of 1.4 to 17.9%, and a p-value equal to 0.023. To us, this difference indicates the need to stratify moderate TBI data by the presence of extracranial injury. Taking all the above together, our 2019 to 2024 Japan Trauma Data Bank data suggests the need for further research is needed to clarify severity, mechanism, and interventions regarding extracranial injury in moderate TBI that result in poor neurologic outcome. Lastly, we have an in memoriam by Gelbert et al. For Professor Rinaldo Bellomo. With profound sadness and deep respect, we honor the memory of Professor Rinaldo Bellomo, an intellectual giant, tireless innovator, and cherished friend whose contributions shaped the field of intensive care and intensive care nephrology. His work transcended disciplines, and his generosity of spirit left an enduring imprint on those of us who had the privilege to learn from and work alongside him. Rinaldo was an unparalleled towering figure of academic and clinical intensive care who shared his passion and excitement for research, who inspired, motivated, and enabled junior clinicians of all disciplines to make a valuable contribution to the body of evidence of intensive care and an opportunity to improve care. In Melbourne, Australia, Rinaldo held numerous positions in the intensive care research community and was regarded as a father-like figure, not only within the Australian and New Zealand intensive care community, but indeed worldwide. He was the director of research at the Austin Hospital, research advisor at the Royal Melbourne Hospital, and held roles at the Florey Institute, where he collaborated extensively on preclinical studies relating to sepsis and his primary passion, renal pathophysiology. He co-founded the Australian and New Zealand Intensive Care Research Center and was pivotal in shaping the success of the Australian and New Zealand Intensive Care Society Clinical Trials Group, a master not only of the science of intensive care, but also of the art of research and its leadership. Rinaldo was visionary. His relentless pursuit of knowledge redefined acute kidney injury, sepsis, and fluid management, primarily for critically ill adults, but also for children. Though not a pediatrician, he was never confined by silos. He understood that good science knows no age boundaries and that progress is born of cross-pollination. He welcomed pediatric voices to the table, elevating the field of pediatric intensive care by insisting that our questions were worthy of rigorous inquiry and that children deserved answers informed by the same precision and passion he brought to adult intensive care. To pediatricians, Rinaldo was more than a collaborator. He was a mentor, an advocate, and a friend. He encouraged curiosity and bold thinking. He took great interest and generously gave his time, expertise, and enthusiasm to supporting pediatric intensive care research in Australia and New Zealand and within the pediatric intensive care and nephrology community worldwide. In Australia and New Zealand, he helped shape the work to standardize the assessment of pediatric sepsis severity, facilitated the establishment of trials in sepsis resuscitation, including metabolic resuscitation with vitamin C, as well as co-supervising higher degrees in an area of passion, fluid resuscitation and fluid accumulation. He attended meetings of the Australia-New Zealand Intensive Care Society Pediatric Study Group to encourage and support its development. He supported young investigators with the same energy he brought to large-scale trials and paradigm-altering consensus statements. Whether during a conference hallway exchange or a deep dive into methodological nuance, he made time, he listened, and he inspired. His literal and figurative doors were always open to everyone who had an idea to share. Rinaldo saw research as a joyous, exciting pursuit in discovery for unraveling the science within dogma to ultimately improve the science of intensive care and patient outcomes. He was masterful at challenging existing notions where opinion outweighed data and inspired others to do similarly. Rinaldo had a unique way of presenting the rationale for developing research. Developing the story by the way he presented the inadequacy of current evidence, the presentation of preclinical or early clinical data, and the rationale for a study was always entertaining, thought-provoking, and inspiring. The case for further inquiry, a study, or a trial was often accompanied by his characteristic, "What do we know about, I don't know," or "Stay with me," or "Really?" What truly set Rinaldo apart, given his international stature and respect, however, was his deep compassion for his patients and kindness. He never lost sight of the human being behind the data. The word kind cannot be overstated when remembering Rinaldo. He gave others undivided attention and the time needed to explore an idea, a manuscript, or develop a research agenda. While his passing leaves a void in our community, his legacy will continue to guide our work. We remember Rinaldo not only for his unmatched intellect and scholarly contributions, but for the warmth, humility, and humanity with which he engaged people. Whether to an academic or clinical peer, a junior intensive care trainee, or allied health clinician, Rinaldo would interact equally in sharing the pursuit, the desire, and the opportunity to conduct research. He encouraged others to be bold, to lead and generate new evidence regarding the practice of intensive care. His presence as an academic figurehead of intensive care will be missed worldwide, including within the pediatric intensive care community. As a colleague and mentor to many of us whom he supported, encouraged, and motivated, he will be dearly remembered as a source of inspiration. In carrying forward his spirit of inquiry, belief in collaboration, and commitment to patient-centered care, we honor his life and strive to continue his work. He will be deeply missed and forever remembered. Vale Rinaldo. This concludes the abstracts for the October 2025 issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.